जय राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी, मदाभा जय गोपी जन भलाभा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन भलाभा गिरिवर धारी, यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जमुना तीरा बन छारी, जमुना तीरा बन छारी, जैया राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी, मदाभा कुंज बिहारी, जैया राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी, जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमद् वैषेयिकी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्रीमद्वै डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की निरंतरा श्रीमन भागवतम की निताई गौर प्रेमनंदी, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, वजा रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमन भागवतम कैंटो 10 द समन बोर्न ऑन चैप्टर 11 द चाइल्डहुड पास्टाइम्स ऑफ लॉर्ड कृष्णा Text 55 and 56. Text 55. Aho batasya balasya bahavo. Bahavo mrityavo bhavam apyasid bipriyam tesham kritam purvajato bhajam. Translation. The cowherd man headed by Nanda Maharaj began to contemplate. It is very astonishing that although this boy Krishna has many times faced many varied causes of death, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it was the cause of fear that were killed instead of him. For 4. The cowherd man innocently thought, quote, because our Krishna is innocent, the causes of death that appeared before him were themselves killed instead of Krishna. This is the greatest grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. End of quote. And today's verse in the board, 56. Athapyabhibhavantyenam. Naivate ghora darshanaha jigamsa jainan asadya nasyantyaknau patam gavad athapyabhibhavantyenam naivate ghoradarshana jigamsa jainan asadya nasyantyaknau patangavat athapyabhibhavantyenam naivate ghoradarshana jigamsa jainan asadya nasyantyaknau patangavat. Athapyabhibhavantyenam naivate ghoradarshanah jigamsa jainan asadya nasyantyaknau patangavat athapyabhibhavantyenam naivate ghoradarshana jigamsa jainan asadya nasyantyaknau patangavat atha api.
Although they come to attack,
abhibhavanti,
they are able to kill,
inam, this boy,
na, not,
eva,
certainly,
te,
all of them,
goradarshanaha,
very fierce looking,
jigamsaya,
because of envy,
enam,
unto Krishna,
asadya,
approaching,
nasyanti,
are vanquished,
death occurred to the aggressor,
agno,
in fire,
patangavat,
like flies.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki.
Although the causes of death,
the daitas, were very fierce,
they could not kill this boy Krishna.
Rather, because they came to kill innocent boys,
as soon as they approached,
they themselves were killed,
exactly like flies attacking a fire.
Poor.
Maharaj Nanda innocently thought, quote,
perhaps this boy, Krishna, formerly killed all these demons,
and therefore in this life they are envious and are attacking him.
But Krishna is a fire,
and they are flies.
And in a fight between fire and the flies,
the fire is always victorious.
End of quote.
Fighting is always taking place between the demons and the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Paritranaya sadunan vinasajya chaduskritam,
Bhagavad Gita 4:8.
Anyone who is against the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead
must be killed,
life after life.
Ordinary living beings are subject to karma,
but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always victorious over the demons. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurube Namaha. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Ramaswamiti Namaha. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyati Adisane. Vancha kalpa taruvyasha kripa sindhu vyaiva cha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. So we got a little bit of an explanation of the thinking and the process of the cowherd man in Vrindavan. How they try to understand and how they make a rational process of what they hear of Krishna's pastimes. They are aware of the dangers of demons that are harassing the land of Vrindavan. And they are aware that actually somehow or other this beautiful boy, their boy Krishna and Balaram, their boys Krishna and Balaram, are attracting or they're being constantly put in danger by the presence of these demons that comes specifically to kill them. And they're, like yesterday I was mentioning, that they're trying to make some arrangements to bring protection, but they're aware that whatever arrangement they make, they're not successful in stopping the attacks of these demons. Almost in a daily basis, these demons keep coming. So there is something that is very clear to them, that by the grace of the Supreme, Krishna and Balaram are protected. And by the divine justice that the Supreme Lord established in the world, in the universe, in the cosmic creation, then automatically these demoniac aggressors are vanquished at the moment they come to attack Krishna. Because they see Krishna as the ultimately innocence and purity, most beautiful, innocent child. So when you have this innocent child being attacked by a demon, automatically, just by that action, it's like a fly going into a fire. They automatically become vanquished. They automatically be killed. So they're thinking like that. They're trying to explain what the children of Vrindavan explain, they talk. They're not able necessarily, I mean, so far they haven't been direct witness of Krishna's pastime from killing these demons. They hear about it, and I mean, Mother Yasoda sort of saw how and the cowherd ladies, when Putana in the form of a beautiful woman took Krishna and tried to feed him with his poisonous breast, and then Krishna is starting to suck her life air, and she run and start, and at one point, poof, the disguise just came off, and then she was, she displayed the form of this gigantic witch. But it doesn't say that he did it. She did it in front of everybody. In fact, the way Krishna killed Putana, they just didn't see. They were not able to see. They were not able to see when Krishna kicked the demon car and destroyed it. But in general, the ones who were seeing were the children of Vrindavan. They were able to witness. They witnessed the killing of Shakatashura, the demon card. What's the name of the whirlwind demon? Is Trinivarta. He was basically killed when he fell. How he fell, that powerful demon, from the sky with Krishna, they couldn't explain. But the understanding was, oh, the demigods, either Lord Vishnu or the servants of Lord Vishnu killed this demon. That was their understanding. When the Arjuna, the twin Arjuna trees fell down, the children saw what Krishna did. And then now this Batsasura and this last one, what's his name now? I'm getting a blank. Bakasura and Batsasura. These two demons were with the cowherd boys, the witness. And after they witness Krishna's activities, they go and tell all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. They told, similarly, when the two Arjuna trees fell down, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda and the cowherd people, they came and they were surprised. They see these two gigantic trees fell. The sound when they fell, the trees fell, was very, very huge. And so they came very scared. It was very dangerous. And Krishna was in between the two fallen trees. So they thought, oh, this must be the action of another demon. Because how these gigantic trees can fall like this? And they consider that this was another demon, and Krishna was again saved by Lord Narayan or the servants of Lord Narayan. But the children say, no. Krishna did it. He crawled in between the two trees and knocked them down, and then these two very effulgent personalities came out and they started to talk to Krishna. And they were, I don't know if the children are saying, you know, this is, they're children, so they have a very vivid imagination. And so it didn't make sense that little crawling baby Krishna was able to do that. Impossible. So, but now, as the children have grown and they are herding the calf into the forest of Vrindavan, and they spend the time playing and herding the calf, then the cowherd boys comes with these poetic narrations of Krishna's killing these powerful demons. So they acknowledge, because they know these demons are there, and they acknowledge that this is happening. There is these demons that are attacking, and they're fierce, and they're powerful, and they're being killed. So how is possible that this is happening? It cannot be like the children said, or maybe Krishna is killing them. Maybe Krishna is very powerful, but you know, these powers are given by Lord. Now they're trying to rationalize, but they just don't come to the point of saying, oh, he is Lord Narayan. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they just don't come to that conclusion, which is sort of different than how someone like Vasudev and Devaki, or Queen Kunti, or Arjuna, they come to conclusions that at one point it clicks. Oh no, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they address Krishna like that. Very different. And you know, we're talking about eternal associates of the Lord, like Arjuna. You know, Arjuna comes and tells Krishna, you are the Supreme, you know, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavam. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the Supreme shelter. You are the Supreme Pure. So Queen Kunti acknowledged the position of Krishna in her prayers. Bhishma, Dev, Vidura, Dronacharya, they all address Krishna, and they understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they address him as such. But the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they just can't. Even when everything is happening right in their face, when Krishna is there. And that's the power and the beauty of this Krishna's yoga maya potency. That in order to not disrupt the type of relationship that is there, that is only based on unmixed just affection towards Krishna, not mixed with awe and reverence, but it's actually just a very intimate relationship in which Krishna becomes dependent in one sense, or Krishna comes to the level of being an equal. That relationship doesn't become disturbed by the knowledge and understanding that, oh no, Krishna is the source of everything and he is the Supreme. When that understanding comes, then immediately one becomes the mood of the bhava of Aishwarya, this awe and reverence, the majesty of understanding Krishna's position, then immediately disrupt that mood that made me think that I am Krishna's protector, or I am Krishna's friend. That's what happened to Arjuna. These devotees that I mentioned Arjuna or Queen Kunti or Vasudev and Devaki, Bhishmadev, Vidura, all these different characters that are there that are devotees of Krishna, they have this mixed position in which they go from being completely taken into the mood of the relationship, like Arjuna, he have the relationship of friendship with Krishna. But the friendship of Krishna, the friendship of Arjuna and the friendship of someone like Madhumanga or Sridham or Subal or Raktak or all these cowherd boys is different. It's in a different level of intimacy. Because Arjuna, he was in this mood of friendship, but he was to understand Krishna's position. And when he understands Krishna's position, then he goes like, how, what terrible thing, how horrible that I considered you, that I acted like you were my friend. Like, I'm, you know, I'm sitting in the bed, the same bed with you, and joking around, and sometimes, you know, arguing against you, and this type of thing, eating from the same plate. How terrible that I dare to act like that, you know, when you are when you are the supreme. So he lamented like that, Arjuna. The Bhagavad Gita is that part in the 11th chapter that he laments. With the cowherd boys, they never get to that conclusion. Even though they see Krishna as their only shelter, when there's danger, they always call for Krishna. And that's all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So the sense that Krishna is their protector is very inconceivable how this thing happened, because they see Krishna as the center of everything, and they see Krishna as their protector. When Indra was flooding Vrindavan with the rains of devastation, they immediately called for Krishna, and that was everybody. Krishna, protect us. And take into consideration, Krishna was a 7-year-old boy. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And then they go in between. Then when Krishna indeed protects and performs these most amazing activities, and that everybody saw. He lifted Govardhan with the pinky of his left hand. And still, the process was well, he definitely have mystic powers, but he's not God. And then we better help too, because you don't know, he may get tired. So they pull it, their sticks, you know, and try to hold all these cowherd men holding Govardhan. And then Krishna, just to mess with them, he let go a little bit, and then the whole thing comes down and almost break the sticks. They can understand that, you know, they cannot do anything, you know. But still, it doesn't process. So the acharyas explained to us that it's a necessary element that Krishna allows or does with the devotees that are in that level of intimacy and love. That we spoke before in the beginning of this canto about the power of this Maya potency of the Lord. So the Maya potency of the Lord is what takes away the capacity of understanding the Lord's position. And that potency has these two divisions. One is the Yoga Maya potency, the other one is the Mahamaya potency. So it comes from the same source, or the same, that's the Maya potency. So Maya means you see, you see something as it's not. What is how you say? You don't see things as it's supposed to be, as they are. It's an illusion. It's what is not. Maya means what is not. So the Yoga Maya potency applies to those who are devotees. And that Yoga Maya is described as also this divine potency. Krishna refers to that divine potency in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how those who are devotees, they always under the protection of this divine potency. How's it go? There's Daivihyesha Gunamayi, no, it's a different one. This Diving Prakritan Ashrita. Diving Prakrita. So this Prakriti, or this nature, this divine nature, is always protecting the devotees. So that is this Yoga Maya potency. So by the Yoga Maya potency, the devotee cannot recognize Krishna as God. So it's the same result, but one is for the devotees, so they don't recognize him. One is for the non-devotees, the Mahamaya, or those who are opposed to Krishna, or turn their backs on Krishna. And then you just don't recognize him. So you're not able to be Krishna conscious. So in the condition, material condition, we don't see. So that's why it takes time for one to start to be able to see, because for the devotees, when you come in front of the deities, you have faith, and there is the experience of there is God. And we experience it. There is a reciprocation. It's an experience. Obviously, that experience is limited to the material condition that we as devotees are trying to purify. And we hear that from those who are perfectly pure, then they see, you know, the deity now is fully manifested, manifesting their qualities and their lilas. So, and the devotees are able to be part of that, experience that. So we hear narrations of the deities speaking to the devotees and having pastimes. Just recently we were remembering about the Lord Balaji and the pastimes that he had with his devotees there. There was a famous devotee, I think it was Mahapurna. You remember Hema? The devotee who used to take care of the garden. I think his name was Mahapurna, or I can't remember it fully. But there was a devotee. There was a very intimate devotee that a follower of Ramanujacharya that was taking care of Balaji in Tirupati. And he had this beautiful garden. And he will make He will make the garlands for Lord Balaji, and the garlands were so beautiful. I mean, he established actually one of the traditions of that temple. That temple is considered the wealthiest temple in the world. The worship is most opulent, and the things that are the most opulent offering to the deities is the flowers, the flower garlands. And they're thick like this, and it's always been like that since, you know, centuries and centuries. So this devotee, he established as a standard. And the deity, which Balaji is Krishna as a cowherd boy, sort of a small Krishna, just like Krishna that is playing right now in this lila in Vrindavan. So Balaji is that Krishna, that type of age. So he will come sneak into the garden and play around, and sometimes, because this devotee was getting old and he won't compromise on his service, Balaji will come and, you know, offer his help. And this devotee was, you know, very sort of intense. He would shoo away this boy, get out of here, you know. So, and the boy would take shelter of the devotee's wife. So anyway, there's all these sort of interactions. And at one point, because he didn't want any help, he didn't want anyone to actually interfere with his service, even if it was his health was very bad, he still would do. And if someone interrupt his service, he will be very angry. And he have chastised this boy that comes to try to help. He told him, don't come again to disturb my service or I'm going to punish you. And at one point he found Balaji doing part of his service, and then he chasing him with a spade, and he threw the spade at Balaji and hit him right in the chin and cut him. And anyway, the boy was able to escape, but he did, you know, he did that. And later he found that it was Balaji himself who was doing that, because Balaji had a crack in his chin that came from that spade. So up to now, you see Balaji has like a little white mark of it's like a scar. And the spade is displayed. It's big, you know, in one of the entrance of the temple. So the deities are, this is a deity. I mean, we hear the narrations of Srila Jiva Goswami dressing Lord Damodar, and Lord Damodar sort of playing his flute and dancing, and he's telling him to stand still because he can dress him. That's nothing that will happen when we dress, you know, Kishore Kishori, and at least maybe to Mukunda Raghunath, but definitely not to me when I'm dressing the little deities. But we able to see, nevertheless, as devotees, we all have the capacity to see something. That we got a sense that the deities are reciprocating, that they're there, they're present. And the fact is that most devotees, we develop attachment and affection for the deities. And I can ask every one of you, and you can actually say something about it. That there is something that connects you to the deities, and there's this affection that develops. Non-devotees, they consider that as plain sentimentalism. You know, that's something that you want to believe and you believe it. You have, you know, that's what this sentimental faith, you know, does. But for the faithful, it's a real experience. It's a real experience. And the fact is that no one can question that from the devotees. It's, we experience it. That's why we're still, that's how this Shraddha, this faith, you know, is, grows. But the non-devotee cannot see. The non-devotee, it's very difficult for the non-devotee to understand, to wrap the concept of deity worship. They may consider, you know, as a cultural thing that is, I mean, if you're open-minded, you see, oh, nice cultural thing that helps for people to, you know, direct their faith. But how can you tell it's God? How can you say this is, there's God? There is God. I mean, I believe in God, but how can you say that the deity is God? It's a representation of God. Yes, I may take that, but you know, they won't be able to see or accept that. And that's some people that are pious, that are so even open for the discussion. But then there's people that are the Duskritinas, that definitely this thing, it just doesn't penetrate. Especially the two classes, the Mayaya Aparahita Jnana and the Asuras. Demoniac people, atheists, doesn't matter how you put it, they're just demoniac, they just don't accept. The concept of God makes them angry. And the Mayaya Aparahita Jnana are intellectuals that, because of pride, they can accept that there is something that is supreme. They think that their quest of the Mayaya Aparahita Jnana, or those whose intelligence has been stolen by illusion, is to conquer over nature. So nature is they are the superior force, and by their prowess and by their intelligence, they will conquer nature. So, but is the most foolish attempt. And then the other two, the mudas and the mudas and the Naradhama, the lowest among mankind, and the fools, they just like that, they just fools. And lowest among the fools are just fools. They do not have very good intelligence. And the Naradhama, the lowest among mankind, are those who have some education and have some, they're so-called civilized and exposure, but they too attach to bad habits and, you know, sort of demoniac tendencies. So although they're supposed to be civilized, they act like in a very low manner. So the illusion or the incapacity to understand Krishna or the personality of Godhead is fully manifested in conditioned people. Only when one receives the mercy of someone who is in this divine space, then we start to get the capacity to see and to experience. And that's how, you know, we're the beneficiaries of that. You know, first the devotee plays that seed of faith, of devotion in the conditioned soul, and then by association that seed starts to grow and one starts to experience. And then, you know, if one follows in good association, then that seed will grow into and bear the fruits of love of Godhead. And then we can enter into this realm in which it's just unadulterated, uninterrupted, a loving relationship with Krishna. That is not that by the grace of Lord Chaitanya can be in this space of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, which is quite inconceivable. That you're able to experience this such an intimate relationship with Krishna that never gets hampered by the understanding of Krishna's position, but it's just this intimate space, this intimate love. Quite something. Any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna, Subal Prabhu, and thank you for your class. One point I appreciated that you made among many is that you were essentially saying that by Yoga Maya, the devotees, the Vrajabhasis, considered themselves the protector of Krishna. And if that Yoga Maya wasn't there, then that devotion to Krishna, that affection for Krishna, obviously wouldn't be there. And we see in our practical experience, when a baby is crying, a mother, she hurries over to feed her child. But for us, if Krishna was crying, if that Yoga Maya wasn't there, if Krishna's crying, we're like, oh, he'll feed himself. You know, he'll eventually stop and feed him. And Krishna was like, can I get some milk over here? Then he'll start talking. So we see that if Yoga Maya wasn't there, that affection as a baby wouldn't be there. And I kind of thought that was kind of comical. Or he'll protect himself, the demons coming, you know, I'm just going to watch TV. And I think that's sometimes in our spiritual life, we could kind of become ungrateful for deity worship or chanting the holy name, because unfortunately for us, you know, we're not fortunate enough to be covered by Yoga Maya, we're covered by Mahamaya, so we really don't care about Krishna. So he could take care of himself in the deity worship. We become lackadaisical, so I speak for myself. So that was one point I appreciated you made. But my main point is, in this verse, it mentions, I don't remember that, but in both the verses, the death was mentioned. They were afraid that Krishna would die. It's something to that effect. And this came to mind with Prabhupada. He came to the U.S. at the perfect time. It brings to mind something Prabhupada said, something I was meditating on also, is that when Prabhupada came to the U.S., at the time, the Vietnam War was going on. And so when the devotees met Prabhupada, Prabhupada essentially told them, there's something much more scarier than man-made wars. And he was like, what could be possibly more scarier than man-made wars? Maya-made wars. Man-made wars go on some of the time, or even most of the time, but Maya-made wars go on not some of the time, not most of the time, but all of the time. Therefore, Prabhupada said, we should be less concerned about Vietnam, the war against our external enemies, and more concerned about Harinam, the war against our internal enemies, because we see so many examples like politicians, they ascend to power by defeating their external enemies. Then what happens? Before the re-election, they descend from power. Why? Because they didn't defeat their internal enemies. So there's a nice quote by Buddha. He says, if one man conquer in battle 1,000 times 1,000 men, and if another conquer himself, he is the greatest of conquerors. One's own self and mind conquered is better than all other people. So that's one quote I appreciate. Another point that Prabhupada mentioned to the devotees, essentially, he says, why should you fear death? The soul is immortal. In the Gita, he instilled that fearlessness in them. In the Gita, Krishna says, the soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. It's indestructible. So why should you fear death? But Prabhupada says there's something we should fear. We should fear the death of our spiritual potential, the death of our peace of mind, the death of our patience, the death of all our good qualities. And there's a nice quote. It says, death is not the greatest loss in life. The greatest loss is what dies inside of us while we live. And we see that in a battlefield, if you don't kill your enemy, then your enemy will kill you. And so Prabhupada told his devotees, if you don't kill your envy, then your envy will kill you. If you don't kill your pride will kill you. If you don't kill your impatience will kill you and all your relationships, all these good qualities. So we see sometimes devotees walking around, you know, spiritually alive, physically alive, but spiritually dead, always quarreling, age of Kali, always. So if I had to ask a question, my question would be, is that, and my question is related to one point that I appreciate, because when I was talking to Jitendriya or Prithu Sharma or some of the Prabhupada disciples, I will always ask them a question. How did you avoid the Vietnam War? And some of them says, I remember Prithu Sharma told me that, from what I remember, he had a doctor forge a signature. He went to one country, but then had a doctor forge a signature. That's how he was able to escape the Vietnam War. Jitendriya said his number was called first, but then somehow or other they called it last. Radhanaswami mentions in his biography, he mentions how he escaped the Vietnam War. So we see it may be possible to escape the external wars if you're a woman, if you have a Dr. Forge's signature, or if you flee to another country. But in devotional life, we see that it's not possible to flee your internal enemies. And so sometimes when we become lackadaisical in our Krishna consciousness, we think, oh yes, I'm not, basically we don't realize that basically, there's no escape from our internal enemies. So when we go on a battlefield, you have to equip yourself with the proper weapons. But unfortunately, our spiritual, so my question is that what are some steps we can do to make us gain a realization that essentially that we might as well get serious about our Christian consciousness, because if we don't, we could see quarrel all the time, quarrel with our external enemies and quarrel with our internal enemies, you know, devoted to sense gratification, then fighting, then criticizing each other. And we see that goes on all the time. And that's probably a manifestation of not taking the war against Maya very seriously. So what are some steps we could move forward to gain the realization that as soon as we took birth, we got drafted in the war of Maya, and there's no escape. So maybe you could explain some of these points that I've meditated on deeply, not just now, but many times before.
Practice. I mean, we have to understand that, what is it? Krishna says that to be able to conquer the mind, we can conquer by constant practice and determination. So remember this quote from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that says, basically don't give up ever the chanting. So if you have no taste for the holy name, chant. If you fall down and you can't, you know, sustain your vows, chant. If you, you know, he goes into all these different obstacles, seats and things, and only one as a neophyte devotee or as an aspired devotee have to go through, and he keeps saying, just don't stop chanting. So basically, in our situation, you know, we are in this process of purification, most of us, and it becomes very clear that to overcome certain condition is very difficult, and sometimes the natural feeling is that and this is being explained by Srila Rupa Goswami, that the natural feeling is of hopelessness, hoping against hope, right? Srila Rupa Goswami's. So there is this sense of hopelessness of your capacity to overcome your material condition. And that is, when you feel like that, when you come to that, that's a symptom that you're getting very closer to get healthy. Because every ordeal that we have to go through is simple to bring us to the position of full surrender to Krishna. That we see Krishna as our only protector and only maintainer, like that, the six angas of surrender. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan has that perfect, even though they don't understand Krishna as God, Krishna was their only protector, their maintainer, their shelter. They will fully surrender to Krishna. Whatever Krishna says, they will do. Even as a little boy, he will direct things. Don't worship Indra, worship Govardhan. Okay, worship Govardhan. I mean, 7-year-old boy telling, you know, and some of the elders, we heard just recently about the qualities of Upananda, the eldest brother of Nanda Maharaj, in a very wise and qualified personalities. So, but they were totally surrendered to Krishna. So everything that we have to go through is just to help us come to that position. So Krishna, by ordeal, at one point, brings us to understand that the only way to be able to become free and safe is that we solely surrender to him. Mam ekam sharanam braja. So, you know, we abandon all our attempts of shelters that are there and sort of see him as our only shelter. So we are put through in different ways and different means to the same test. Well, not the same, but, you know, the same principle in the test that was, you know, Draupadi was put when she was being dragged into the hall of the cruise and then attempted to be disrobed. So we're stubbornly trying to take care of ourselves. You know, we have this sense of independence, and we will figure it out. You know, and I keep trying to figure it out because I want to have a still, I'm holding to this sense of independence. And at one point, just by ordeal, by understanding, I can't do anything about this thing. It's just, it keeps coming. Why? I'm still getting angry. I'm still getting lusty. I'm still getting this. I'm still getting that. All this different. I'm still find myself, actually, I'm being envious. You know, you're still finding the thing. And then Krishna is helping us to see, you know. And then he's helping us to understand that he is our only shelter. He is the one who will protect us from this thing. Like, it's only him, the one who gives the power. Arjuna came to that conclusion too, that all his prowess and powers was just Krishna's, the manifestation of Krishna's mercy. So so that's, we just have to stick to that and understand that we're in the process of coming there. And you know, for most of us, is a natural, organic, gradual process that your faith and your way, your faith that Krishna will be, just by Krishna, everything will be all right. You're moving towards that. That's the definition of faith in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That, you know, we have that conviction that by the practices of Krishna consciousness, everything will be taken care. So we go into that, we move into that. But the secret, our part, is that we can, regardless of our upside downs, we pick ourselves and we continue in the association of devotees following our practices. And if something happens that I, you know, stumble and fall down, I stand up again and pick up my beadbag and then come to the temple and do my service and this and that, you know. Listen to the Bhagavatam, associate with the devotee. I don't give up the association. And like that, you know, we'll get there. We will get there. It's how the process is supposed to be. Yeah. Yes, Keshava Kishorpa. Okay.
I think it's the most important point because you reminded me, your point reminded me of something
else. Keep it short, okay?
All right. You were mentioning in the beginning of answering my question that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, keep chanting regardless. You know, regardless of your circumstances, whether you fell down, this and that. One thing that came to mind is that how do we keep chanting regarding like the last analogy? We see that Bhagavatam it says in order for us to truly kill our demoniac qualities, at least theoretically, that's only Krishna's mercy, it doesn't matter how, but it's to have the proper motivation. And we see that on a movie set, they have fake war sets where they go on a movie set, and in that movie set they use fake bullets, blanks, and these blanks can't do any harm to anyone. And so if we have the improper motivation, that means we're not using, you know, Lord Chaitanya says the most powerful forms of devotional service, sadhu, sangha, nama, kirtan, bhagava, shrava, matura, vashri, mutir, shradaya, sevan, associating with devotees, nama, chanting the holy name, bhagava, etc., hearing Bhagavatam. But in order for us to properly kill our demoniac qualities, we have to do it with the proper motivation. If you go on a battlefield and you have blank bullets, it may look nice. The holy name may look nice. The Bhagavatam may look nice. A fake gun with fake bullets may look nice. But if you don't have real bullets, the proper motivation, then it's not going to do really much to kill your demoniac quality. Like I said, that's only theoretically speaking. Doesn't matter how much we have the proper motivation. If Krishna doesn't kill our demoniac qualities for us, then it's all useless. But at least we could have some sense of peace of mind if we have the proper motivation. That's why that verse from Adi Alila chapter 8, verse 16, it says, Bahu jama kare yadi shravanam kirtan tabutanam paya krishnam pade primadam. You can chant, use the weapon of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra for many births, but if you don't put real bullets in it, the proper motivation, then it's not going to do much to kill your demoniac qualities. And Prabhupada Napapur mentions, what's the proper motivation? Trinadapi suni chena taro eva sahishnuna manina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. And some things, there's many things that keep us from respecting others. And that's, you know, pride, I'm superior to you. Envy, I want to drag you down. So many things. So anyway, these are some points to keep in mind that I've kept in mind that's helping my Krishna consciousness. And it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam so many times. But in other words, it's in order for us to follow it with the proper motivation for us to give some sense of peace of mind. Like I said, in the end, it's all useless without Krishna mercy, even if we have the proper motivation. But at least we can have some sense of peace of mind, you know. If somebody's honored more than us, we won't become so depressed. Mm-hmm. So anyways, thank you for letting me share that. All right, Krishna.
Thank you. Garantarashimam Bhagavatam ki jai.